I'm joined now by Brian Littell. He's a former high-ranking U.S. intelligence officer and the author of After Fidel, the inside story of Castro's regime and Cuba's next leader. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Littell.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Now, you've written a biography of Raul Castro. He's effectively been exercising presidential powers for the last 19 months, ever since Fidel became more seriously ill. Now that he's officially president, can we expect him to deviate from his brother's path?
Well, I think that Raul is going to be making his own mark. There have been very many clues to that over the last 19 months of his interregnum. And the leadership team that he announced today, I think, pretty strongly indicates that. The top five or six positions right under Raul are all old-time veterans of the revolution. All but one of them are in their late 60s or 70s. This is his team. These are what we call Raulistas. These are men who have been close to Raul, some of them going back many, many years. It's also important to point out, Raul is a lifelong career military officer, and two or three of these men are also high-ranking military officers.
Well, how do you think he might deviate from Fidel's path?
Raul wants economic reform. It's not so much that he loves the idea of introducing market mechanisms or supply and demand into the Cuban centralized economy, but he knows he's got to. Day by day, the risk grows greater that the younger generation of Cubans, the large segment of the population that's very disadvantaged economically, these people want change. They want a more productive economy. They want greater efficiency. They want more opportunity, economic opportunity. I think they're going to be getting it. It's going to be gradually implemented. But this leadership team recognizes the urgency of beginning to implement some meaningful economic reforms.
Where do you think this is going to leave relations with the United States as it faces Raul and a, you know, seriously aged band of former revolutionaries?
Well, I think that we'll probably begin to see changes in the bilateral relationship maybe this year, but I think the likelihood is much greater that by next year, when we have a new occupant in the White House, that we're going to begin to see some significant change. It could even come this year.
Where would you look for it first? What would be evidence?
Well, I think that Raul has already given three indications on three different occasions that he would like to have a dialogue with the United States. So far as I know, he has not been taken up on that offer. But I think it's inevitable. Relations are going to change.
But since it is such an old guard, why do you think that there'll be significant change?
Well, this is an old guard close to Raul. He's not taking any chances. These are men he knows well. One of the men who's a vice president, Jolome Ibarra, has been at Raul's side for 50 years. He's the Minister of Interior. He runs all of the security, intelligence, and police agencies on the island. Julio Casas, one of the other vice presidents, is a three-star general. He's been the other most senior man in the armed forces after Raul. Another vice president, Juan Almeida, is an old revolutionary. He was with the Castro brothers from the very beginning. But these are men Raul can count on. They're going to be protecting his flanks, and they're all going to be opposed to political reform.
Brian Littell is a senior research associate at the University of Miami's Institute for Cuban and Cuban-American Studies. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now to the American presidential contest. Democratic presidential candidates Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have been squaring off over NAFTA. At a factory in Ohio today, Obama accused Clinton of retreating from what he said was her earlier support for the trade deal. The back and forth over NAFTA and health care reached a peak yesterday when Clinton denounced Obama's campaign literature, criticizing her stance on those issues. Clinton is running behind on delegates, and many observers say she has to win the all-important Ohio and Texas primaries handily on March the 4th. We turn now to one of her Midwest supporters, Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. I caught up with her today here in Washington at the winter meeting of the National Governors Association. Governor Jennifer Granholm, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. You're a supporter of Senator Clinton's, and her campaign seems to be running into difficulty as Barack Obama keeps racking up wins in primaries and caucuses. Do you think that the tougher tone she's taken this weekend when she denounced Senator Obama's ads and flyers is a good strategy for her?
Well, you know, I don't know that there was a strategic thing about it. I think she feels extremely passionately about the subjects that were challenged in those flyers. Health care and trade. Those are critical issues for Ohio, critical issues, I can say, as the governor of Michigan, for Michigan. And I think she feels honestly and earnestly, very deeply, passionately about them.
What do you think Senator Clinton needs to do to connect better with the voters as she prepares for these truly make-or-break primaries in Ohio and Texas?
Well, you know, I think that at the end of the last debate, we saw a window into what she could continue to do, which is really to be very genuine. And, you know, I know personally she is so, she's engaging and she's sincere. So that sincerity, I think, is something she can continue to show people, and I think that will have an impact.
I wanted to ask you now about the delegate situation in Michigan. The Democratic National Committee says that the state is to be penalized for moving of its primary, of course, that's what they've been saying. The committee said it wouldn't seat or count any of your delegates at the convention. Will you now support Senator Clinton's bid to get the Michigan delegates seated?
I have always supported the bid to get Michigan delegates seated. It's about our voters. We had 600,000 people participate. You know, the DNC did a great disservice to both Michigan and Florida when it decided to take away all of our delegates. We understood going in that there might be consequences, but they could have done what, for example, the Republican National Committee did, was to seat half of a delegate. So that way you're not fully alienating the voters of two states that are going to be so critical for the general election.
But Senator Clinton is the only candidate who left her name on the Michigan ballot. So why should the delegate selected in the Michigan primary be seated? It doesn't seem like a fair election.
What wasn't fair either is that there were candidates who chose to remove their names. I mean, she wasn't the only, you know, Dennis Kucinich was still on the ballot. Chris Dodd was still on the ballot. The bottom line is we've got to respect the will of the voters in Michigan, but we also have to have this resolved before the convention. And the DNC has every incentive to get this resolved before the convention so that there's not a floor fight.
Would a resolution mean possibly holding a caucus
no,
or another election
I don't
in
think
Michigan?
So. I don't think so, because then you really would, you know, sort of throw out the results of a vote that was agreed to on almost unanimous fashion. And the purpose for us in moving forward, which a number of other states support, is to say it's not fair that just Iowa and New Hampshire have such a disproportionate say on who is our president overall.
Let's say that your nightmare scenario does happen. It isn't fixed. The race goes all the way to the convention. It could happen. And you are a superdelegate at that convention committed to Senator Clinton. But let's say that Senator Obama has more votes in these primaries. Will you remain committed if the delegates are the crucial and deciding factor? Will you remain committed
to
Senator Clinton?
I'm not going to buy the hypothetical that you've just put before me, because it will be resolved before we get to the convention. I know that every single superdelegate, every leader of the Democratic Party, everyone has said, including Howard Dean, that this must be resolved before we get to the convention.
Do you ever think about 1968?
We don't want to have happen in Denver what happened there.
Governor Jennifer Granholm, thanks very much for speaking with us today.
A pleasure.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Jackie Lydon. We continue our political coverage now. Just a few minutes ago, we had on Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm of Michigan, a Clinton supporter. Republican Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana is here as well in Washington for the winter meeting of the National Governors Association. I also spoke with him about the presidential race. Governor Daniels, Senator McCain is the presumptive Republican nominee now. And last week, when the New York Times published an article suggesting that he had an improper relationship with a lobbyist, Republican conservatives publicly rushed to his defense. Do you think the Republican establishment is worried that some of these charges could stick, and should they be?
No. Neither should be, nor are they, I don't think. If there's anything that Senator McCain's known for, it's character and a commitment to the highest standards of conduct, and this will pass.
As he moves to shore up his support with conservatives, he, of course, has always enjoyed the support of independents. Do you think he risks alienating independents as he courts conservative voters?
No, I don't. He's his own man, always has been. He was in our state just the other day, and he didn't change a single thing. He talked about issues like global warming that many so-called conservatives I might disagree with him on, but I believe that his record speaks for itself here. He's also going, you have to remember, he's going to wind up competing against the most doctrinaire left-wing candidate probably ever offered to the American people, and the contrast there ultimately I think will be more than enough to keep those who view the world more conservatively together.
Mm-hmm. Let me push you a little bit on this independent vote that John McCain has always enjoyed. Some of these independents have been leaning towards Barack Obama.
There's a lot of romance around Senator Obama right now, and he's a very gifted candidate. But, you know, if he were a moderate in any way, if he were a new Democrat in any way, he'd be impossible to beat, in my opinion. That's not apparently what we're going to have. He and Senator Clinton are almost indistinguishable. I'm sure they're both sincere, but they're incredibly left-wing in what they stand for. This is old-fashioned statism. I don't know one thing they're for that Senator Ted Kennedy hadn't been for a long time.
Give me a definition, please, when you say left-wing. What do you mean?
Oh, big government answer to everything, from health care to government spending programs without end, high taxation, even in a weak economy. Now, these are legitimate points of view, but they, by any fair description, are pretty extreme. And I think that it does leave room, be a close-run thing at any event, but a maverick, an independent like Senator McCain, I think will have a credible opportunity when we get past the romance and we get to, you know, what people really stand for. He'll have a very credible opportunity to compete for votes in the middle that might not have been available to the Republicans in many cases.
Hmm. Are you worried that the Democratic base has been more energized by what you characterize as the romance of Barack Obama, that the turnout, which we've seen record turnouts in primaries and caucuses, mean that some Republicans might stay at home?
I say more power to them, the Democrats now here. I mean, I think you don't have to agree with things that are being said. I disagree strongly with almost all of it, but to welcome things that excite people about public affairs and bring people out to vote. So I give them credit, and I think Senator Obama deserves most of that credit. But months from now, when it's a binary choice, I think that there's an opening that I was not sure would be there for any Republican in a year when, by many, many for many reasons, we might have been without much chance. So no predictions here, but I think this is going to be a lot more competitive race than it might have been given a different Republican nominee and perhaps a more moderate Democratic nominee.
All right. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. We've been speaking with Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana. Thanks again.
Thank you.